As every living thing burns, every living thing must feed, or its body will be consumed. This is equally true of plants and animals. In the humblest animals, such as the amoeba, the eating is done by any part of the surface of the cell, which is the whole body of the animal. But it is not long in the history of animal life before we find a permanent mouth appearing as a definite part of the animal's body.
Warblers, babblers, and chatterers. It is a cold heart that does not thrill in the presence of this group of singing birds, to which we come now. A dull mind that is not fired by pleasant fancies as one watches, say, that typical warbler, the white throat. He has done the grand tour. He has been across Europe, over the Mediterranean, into Africa and back. And now, when we walk down the hedgeside in the garden where he has set up housekeeping, he bullies us like a little pickpocket.
Great love in our hearts for little treasure
warblers. Babblers,
English people, like those in Longfellow's pretty lines, have home-keeping hearts. Our love is held on as the island is held by its beating, bounding tides.
Warblers,
we love England and English people.
And
we may admire other races, and we have always been most willing to think that foreign artists and musicians are better than our own. But England is our dear love, and we cannot give our hearts away to any other people's treasures. We have never worshipped Greek art and Italian art, bestowed generations of our work as an apprenticeship to the imitation of their genius as other nations have. We left ourselves alone to grow in our own way and refused to become enthusiastic about things we really cared little for. And when our art did come into its kingdom, it bore the stamp of an ancient royalty. We painted just what that singer who wears the crown had sung, pictures of English people and English green fields. Land of such dear souls, this precious stone set
warblers, babblers,
in
and
the
chatterers.
Silver sea. Land of such dear souls, set in the silver sea.
That little war cry is the white throat's endeavor to scare us. Not only from his nest, but from the beat of territory, which he considers his own. And in his pride he rises in a little spiral into the air, and delivers himself of the sweetest, sauciest little song, as if to say, behold, by the terror of my mighty voice, I have frightened hence a creature 3,000 times my own bulk, my own bulk.
We then rub the forefinger of our left hand backward and forward along the top arm of the tongs to generate the magnetism, as we explain. Then, raising our finger, the arm of the tongs rises with it as shown in the picture. At first, the audience hooked our finger under the arm of the tongs, but we invite them to look carefully to see that there is no deception in the trick we show them. We now invite spectators to try the experiment.
Why does a finger lose its feeling when it is numb? The nerves of the finger end in the skin in a number of highly sensitive organs. The action of the end of nerves and the organs at the ends of them depends very much on their temperature. That is probably the chief reason why, in the higher animals, the temperature is fixed instead of moving up and down with the surroundings. When nerves are made cold, as when the finger is numb, they cannot receive impressions at their ends, nor conduct them if received, and so we do not feel. This can often be applied when we wish to make a little cut, or something of the sort, in a finger or some other part of the skin. If the operation is slight and quick, it seems a great pity to make the person unconscious, so as to avoid pain, and it is much better merely to numb the part of the skin in question, if we can. Probably all the various things used for this purpose nowadays depend partly for their success not only on what they do to the nerve itself, but also on the fact that they lower the temperature of the skin, and so interfere with the power of the nerves to convey the brain the sensation we call pain.
Boo!